This is another episode of Stand Up Comedy, your host and MC, celebrating 40 plus years on the fringe of show business. Stories, interviews, and comedy sets from the famous and not so famous. Here's your host and MC, Scott Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us for another episode of Stand Up Comedy, hosted MC. And this time we're digging way down south to Georgia way and bringing in my friend Joel Byers. And he is the man in the southern part and east part of this country. He has got Hot Breath, which is a podcast. It's a Facebook site. He runs it all through Hot Breath Media. He teaches comedy. He does comedy. This is so exciting. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Joel Byers.
Woo! Yeah!
So great to have you on the show. Hey, Joel, you and I have had a chance to work together, not at Laughs Unlimited, but more recently on things like Clubhouse and talking about podcasting. How you doing today, man? Thanks for doing this.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Scott.
Well, you're not only a terrific teacher of the how to write and perform stand-up comedy, and you've been helping young entertainers for a couple of years now, but you're a very successful comic yourself. And I know with this COVID winding down and finally ending, you're getting out and doing some shows. Tell us, Joel, have you always been from Georgia? Is that where you got started?
Yeah, so I was born in Georgia. And Somerville, Georgia, if we're going to be specific, or Someville, if you're from there. It's like Mayberry if it had meth. But it was,
so instead of Somerville, it's Someville, Georgia.
Just Someville. Well, Someville. Yep. So that's where I was born. That's where the roots were laid. But now I live closer up in Atlanta now. So it's been a journey to get here. But my comedy career actually started in Tennessee while I was in school up there. And now I live back here in Georgia where I do pursue comedy full time.
Where'd you go to school in Tennessee?
It's called Maryville, Tennessee. Maryville College, or Merville, if you're up there. You see a theme of redneck Tourette's in my life. Yeah. It's all mispronunciations.
Well, that's okay. You could talk to your people, and that's what counts. So I've had a lot of comics that got their start while at or college and got to like an open mic or something. Is that what happened with you? Tell us the story of how Joel got into comedy.
Yeah, that is exactly how it happened. I was actually just about to graduate. I was the second semester senior year, and I'd always wanted to try comedy. So I figured I had nothing else to lose. You know, Sally Mae took it all. So here we go. Let's try comedy. So I get on the internet and I look for local open mics. And there happened to be one at a club called Side Splitters in Knoxville, Tennessee, which was about 15 minutes away. I did an open mic in front of like eight people. You know, three of them worked there. And nobody booed me. I didn't really like kill, but I didn't bomb. And that was just enough to keep me going.
Yeah. And if you got even one good laugh, I've mentioned it before, it strikes a chord inside you when you make strangers laugh. Did you get a couple laughs that first time?
Yeah, it was like a few giggles. And what I really remember is people just smiling. I remember just standing up there and looking in the audience and like people smiling. And I was just like, this is weird, but awesome. And it really was that moment in like the Matrix of taking like the red pill or the blue pill. It really was like, as soon as I did comedy the first time, I was like, everything in my life is now in pursuit of comedy. Like I am now a comedian. It really was like a huge like revelation for me in my own career and my own just always wanting to do comedy, but then actually deciding to, and just it really was like taking the blinders off. And I've been nothing but pursuing comedy ever since. Everything I do is in the pursuit of just making comedy my career, which I'm so grateful to be able to do now.
Yeah. And you expressed that feeling of finding your path. It's been mentioned by a couple other people, Tom Dreesen and Bob Worley, that, you know, they finally hit the stage. They're nervous. They're anxious. They don't really have any comedy written, but they just wanted to give it a shot. And then that feeling of finding home on stage. Do you remember any of your first jokes?
I mean, like the very first one I did, it was based on my experience going to a WWE event in Knoxville, actually.
Oh, that's a great first premise. Good. Go ahead, share it if you know it.
So it was like, it was something about maybe like partying in college, and it was like something about, and I remember us like we went to this rave and there were guys in like Speedos and they were disco lights and loud music. And then I realized I was at a WWE event. Like, you know, something very silly. Like, I don't think that's the exact wording, but definitely like trying to build that misdirect.
Well, you're painting a picture for the audience, because everybody can picture what they think of the Worldwide Wrestling Federation and one of their big events and presentations and how they overdo everything. It's real easy, and I think it is funny to relate that to a college party. I mean, that's not a bad first premise, Joel. Good job.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's still my best joke to date. So I'll
that one. Well, I'm sure that's not true, but I know that you're a great teacher of comedy and comedy writing, and I'm sure that one of the things you tell young, potential entertainers is to write what you know, or write about your own experience or something, you know, that you can relate to, because that's makes it easier to relate to an audience. Is that true? Is that something you share with people?
100%. I mean, the biggest thing I push with comics is to write personal, like write about material that only you could do, and like put your material through the filter of, like, could someone else say this and it be just as funny? Or is this like unique to me in my life? So that's like the number one thing that I wish I had pursued more when I initially started in those very early years of just trying to write silly things, but really try to dive deeper into my personal life and really start writing from that personal place where you'll find your voice. So yeah, I think that's like the number one thing for me is always pushing and challenging people to dive into their own personal lives, no matter how uncomfortable it may be. And it may be awkward at first or uncomfortable, but the more you do it, the more confident you'll get in writing from that place. And that's when you really start to find material that after a show, people come up to you and are like, oh, that's just like my uncle, or, you know, my wife loves the dog more than she loves me, just like your wife, you know. And that's when they really start to find an audience, and you start to build a fan base through material like that.
Yeah, I agree. And I've done a lot of teachings. In fact, I have a course out and a book out. And one of the things that I say is that if you can relate to the material yourself, the audience will be able to relate to it, because we're all really just human beings going through life. And even though everybody's experience is unique, the concept, you know, when you tell that joke about the WWF, well, most of the people in the audience have either seen on TV or been to or are aware of a WWF event, and they've probably been to a party. And, you know, it's not a hard line to put between the two. And so they can relate to what you're relating to. And I'm probably making too big a deal out of this, but one of the reasons I do the podcast is that we want to understand how we become comics. Now, you were already performing a couple open mics. It's difficult in the beginning to find stage time. You're in Tennessee. You're on your way back to Georgia. Where did you find places to get on stage? Any interesting stories from the beginning?
Oh man. I mean, the early days for me were performing at strip clubs and on sidewalks and public buses, like anywhere and everywhere is where I would perform early on. And, you know, and that's been probably, I've interviewed over 400 comedians on my podcast now. And that's probably the number one piece of advice is like, you got to get on stage. Like, you can learn all the writing, you can write it down, but until you actually take it to the stage, that's when you start to actually, you know, develop as a comedian, is on stage. So I would perform anywhere and everywhere, whether I would Google open mics in my local area. I performed at poetry open mics and music open mics. It really was wherever I could get up is where I would go perform. And some of that came through searching online. Some of that came through asking other comics out on the scene as I was doing open mics, or even starting my own open mics as well. You really got to get creative with it, but it's a lot of work, but it's definitely worth it.
Well, you've really hit the nail on the head. It is so much about getting on stage, getting that practice. However, I think you're the first to say you've done it on a bus. That had to be kind of interesting.
Oh my gosh. Well, the idea was for us to do stand up on the bus, but the bus driver, as soon as we started, she goes, ain't nobody standing on my bus. So we had to sit down.
So even even in early comedy, there's rules on stage.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was a good learning lesson, and one of those moments in this crazy game you don't forget.
Well, yeah, and I've actually had one comic say he was able to do a set on a plane. They were hanging over L.A. and got delayed, and so the Southwest staff let him gave him the microphone, and he did like 10 minutes of material while flying around in a Southwest airline. But a bus is a new one for me. Now, in those early days, strip clubs to moving buses, what did that give you? What did that offer you? Explain to the audience.
It really just gives you that resilience and that like confidence on stage that, well, if I can do this on a bus, then I can definitely do this at an open mic at a coffee shop in front of four people. Like it really, those become like the watermarks of what you're capable of, and it's conquering those fears and those discomforts of like, I don't know if I should do this or is this worth it. You know, you always feel better after, and you're always better after. So it really just kind of taught me to just have that resilience and really that mentality of like, I'm willing to become a comedian by any means necessary, whatever it takes. And I'm willing to like actually live that lifestyle and really say what I'm going to do.
Yeah, and I think you put it well. It gives you a confidence by doing it over and over. In my life, I've been a professional salesman most of my life, and cold calling is one of my expertise. And what you do is it's scary and nervous to walk into a business and introduce yourself cold. But if you do it over and over and you do it enough, it becomes comfortable, and that's what has led me to success in sales. And I think in comedy, it's very similar, is that once you decide that stage is going to be your home, you want to visit it as much as you can. And the trip or the travels to get to that stage are just those walls of in your way to your progression. So you have to knock down those walls and just keep doing it. Now you started in Tennessee. When did you end up back in Georgia where there's some real comedy clubs?
Yeah, I was in Tennessee, you know, basically until I guess I graduated in April or so, I guess. So like in Tennessee, the comedy club there did an open mic like once a month. And then they had like a paid mic once a month that I also did, because, you know, it was just like anything I need to do to like get on stage is what I'm going to do. So it all kind of started there. And then when I got back to Atlanta after I graduated and, you know, moved back home, as, you know, a college grad does. But that pursuit was just any open mic I could find. I really just Googled where open mics were and then just started going to them. Probably the earliest one was at a place called Relapse. It was in the basement of a church. And it didn't have a microphone, and it was called the unmiked open mic.
Well, at least they were creative in explaining it in the name. That's hilarious. I've never heard of an open mic without a microphone.
It was incredible. And that venue has become like Roy Scovel just released like a documentary about that venue, because it did grow into become like a legendary comedy space that has now since closed, unfortunately due to, you know, COVID and all of that. So it was definitely one of my early stomping grounds of developing as a comic. And that really set the bar of, oh, I'm willing to do this without a microphone. Okay. then we'll perform anywhere it takes.
Yeah, that's a little unusual. Here on the West Coast, one of the crucibles for comedy was the Holy City Zoo, which was really a shithole in the wall with, 30 or 40 seats and a stage the size of a postage stamp. But Robin Williams, Paula Poundstone, and a lot of famous comics came out of there because that's where they developed their skills night after night after night. And this place sounds like the same kind of location where you could, it wasn't really huge on the entertainment map, but that made it accessible to go to on a regular basis and really learn and hone your act. I think that's very interesting. Did they continue to go without a mic?
It eventually got popular enough to where they could afford a microphone. So I guess it's just like anything else you do, start ugly and then kind of build from there. So I was happy to be a part of the early days of that mic that it became one of the best mics in the city over time, but it started out, no microphone.
That's hilarious. And I love that phrase, started ugly.
Yeah.
That is so true. So at this point, you have been doing some comedy for a couple years. Had you an opportunity to work with anybody famous or more experienced that you could learn from?
I mean, there were definitely like early mentors in the Atlanta scene. Like I've never had that experience of some people like, I did an open mic. And then all of a sudden, like Ron White walked in and saw me and was like, you're coming on the road with me, kid. I've been doing comedy 12 years and I haven't had an experience like that. I mean, I have done shows where people like Ron White do come in and perform, but it's not like we did the show together and whatnot. So more any famous comics, it's more from like my podcast, I would say, than anyone I've like actually been able to like perform with yet, which I'm totally fine with. I'm not bitter at all. I'll get what I deserve whenever I get it. And it's just patience and persistence.
Right. Patience and persistence are key words. And we'll talk about the podcast in a minute, but I find it interesting that you've developed so well as a professional comic and now as an educator of the art form without really spending a lot of time with somebody that, like you said, mentored you. So you've really done it the hard way, which is from scratch. And my hat's off to you because much like starting a business or anything else, it always helps to have somebody to be able to talk to. And if you have to do it yourself and really grow from nothing, it makes the task a little harder. But you've been doing comedy many years now. Any interesting experiences on the road that helped mold you in your comedy?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. I mean, there's just so many. But it's like the one that really comes to mind is I did a show in Kokomo, Indiana. It was 12-hour drive one way. I did it with a comedian friend of mine and we drove up, did the gig. I made $50 and then drove right back. So we went up there, did the gig and then came right back, got back about, gosh, I don't know if it was, I don't remember what time we got back. I remember we stopped at one point in a gas station and took a nap at like 6 a.m. But it was one of those moments of like, okay, if I can drive to Kokomo, Indiana and back, then I can do anything. So it really was another one of those watermark moments of like, okay, if I can do this, then this gig over here is no problem at all. And that's just one of those many road experiences you have where, I went to Tallahassee and performed at an oyster bar that was known for its hamburgers. I mean, It was a door deal. And then when we got there, the door cover was by donation. And we're in a college town. Nobody, like, it's college students. Nobody's, like, tipping. Yeah, I mean, we definitely lost money on that one. But, those are the experiences that, make you stronger as a comedian and make you more business savvy. And you learn what questions to ask. And you learn the value of your time and how much it's worth to travel to and things like that. I mean, there's no there's no like real manual for it. You know, I'm grateful for, you know, people like you and I who are trying to share this information in one place and that you don't have to like scour the internet and books to find it. But there isn't really like a step by step to becoming a professional comedian. Everyone kind of has their own journey to get there. But these are some lessons that I know for me personally, if I can help comics not learn them the hard way, like, I'm not going to tell them not to do the gig, but just have the context of maybe the value of doing this gig versus not doing this gig. But I never tell a comedian what they should or shouldn't do. I just share my own experience and then let them decide for themselves what they want to do. Because it's that's what I love about comedy is it's at the end of the day, it's you on stage. It's your journey. No two people have, quote, made it the exact same way. So it's just whatever path you want to take, you can just learn from other people and then act accordingly based on what you want to do. But it's everyone has those road stories. It's just part of the gig of being a comedian.
Well, I wanted to bring up two things that I really mean something and bear down on a little bit. One is if you're going to go into stand-up comedy, this art form, you have to have the dedication and the commitment to do gigs, whether it's in a bus or driving 12 hours each way to make $50. Those kinds of stories have been told over and over and over, because once you make this decision and your heart is driving you towards comedy as a career or whatever, you're willing to do whatever it takes because you have that dedication. And then the other thing I wanted to beam down on a little bit more is the business side. Now, I just came out with, you know, earlier this year, I came out with my book, 20 Questions Answered About Being a Stand-Up Comic, plug, and available on Amazon. But one of the things I talk about is the business part. Now, my book is written from a producer's point of view, and I'm trying to teach comics what they need to be aware of. And you've said it very poignantly. It's instead of learning that it's a business the hard way, which is how you and most comics go through it, it would be great if teachers like us could get it into the heads of these entertainers or future entertainers that, yeah, it's an art form and that's what you need to focus on, but it's a business and you're self-employed and you have to be thinking about the expenses and planning out your income, because if you don't, I think that's knocked a lot of probably very talented people out of the business.
For sure. And I think that's something that I'm hoping this next generation of comics understand more than older generations. Like, and I mean, I've been doing comedy 12 years, but I consider these like newer 1 to 5 year generation of comedians. That's the comedians I'm really seeing that are engaged in. I know my podcast and my Facebook group and all that is these younger comics. I hope they realize that it's like, do it to have fun. Don't do it for this pursuit that comedy has to be my full-time job. I want to be my full-time job by the time I'm 5 years in, so like I say I'm a full-time comic. But like, I'm telling you, a lot of the full-time comics I know are living in their cars. They're living with their parents. Like, they're depressed. Like, it takes the fun out when all the pressure, you put all this pressure on comedy to provide for you. If you could make it this fun side hustle, this like fun artistic endeavor to where you're just writing jokes, you're performing, you're getting some road gigs here and there, and you're developing as a comic and developing the skill that then can become a business. That to me is a more sustainable and a more just fruitful pursuit, as opposed to this mindset of, well, I'm not really a comedian unless I'm doing it full time and I'm broke and I hate myself. Like, I think if people can do it while having a day job and just start to ease themselves into comedy, it's going to keep comedy a lot fun for a lot longer. Cause as someone who is in full-time comedy now, it can be tough to to look at the business side and be like, man, you know, I'm a comedian now, but my wife is like, oh, does Georgia Power accept laughs? Do they accept laughs per minute? Is that part of the payment plan? You know, Georgia Power does. So
right.
It takes away a lot of the fun when you bring in the business side, and it's a part of what I am still learning 12 years in of like, how can I make this not only just a fun career, but also like a fruitful and a most importantly, a stable career path.
Yeah, and I don't want to be a wet blanket, but it doesn't matter how long you're in. I've known people that have been in comedy and they're very, very successful 30 plus years. And there is no such thing as consistent, regular income from entertainment. Mm. Doesn't matter if you're a singer, dancer, or actor, gigs come and go. In fact, that's a great segue into my next question for you. We've just come out of 2 years of COVID, and it really knocked the entertainment industry on its ass. And whether you were a singer, an actor, or a comic, literally there was no way to get on stage for over a year. And then in 2021, it was some places you could get on and some places you couldn't, but it really hurt the industry. I know that you have found ways to stay important and active comedically using Hot Breath Media, your Facebook group and your podcast, while all this transitioning was going on. But can you share with the audience how it affected you from 2019 into 20 and how you ended up developing these great ways to reach people and teach people?
I mean, I know it affected everyone majorly. I mean, even outside of the comedy world, but it's like, for me, where my career was poised is, I'd been starting to work the road. In 2019, I'd been getting in with these clubs. And in 2020, I actually released my own comedy special. I self-produced a comedy special.
Awesome.
And yeah, I was excited about it. You know, it's called The Trophy Husband. And it's available on my website. But what I did was I released this special, and I had a Trophy Husband comedy tour booked. And I was actually, these clubs I'd been getting in with, I was starting to actually headline these clubs. So in 2020, I was actually poised to become my goal, which was like a nationally touring headliner. And then it just overnight, literally, I went and did a gig in Wilmington, North Carolina. And then on the way back, that was the last gig I did. Like the next day, it was like, oh, the world's shutting down.
And man, you got hit hard. Joel, that's kind of, I mean, I don't want to state the obvious, but that is a soul crushing opportunity lost. You Trophy Husband was out, was just starting to get you to that level, and the rug was pulled right out from under you. I'm so sorry, man. That is tough. But you're resilient because you kept going.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like one of my favorite quotes is like, you can't control what happens, but you can control how you react to it. So it was just that moment of like, okay, well, what can I control? You know, focusing on what you can control. Okay, you can't control that live shows are gone, but what can I control? And I had this podcast I had been doing for several years, and I had really just been focusing on the interview aspect of it and just doing weekly interviews with comedians. But then I started to really focus on the community aspect of the podcast. And I started this Facebook group, started the YouTube channel, and I started doing this daily writing club where for over 400 days, I went live every single morning at 10 a.m. For better or worse, there were some mental breakdowns in there, but which they're now affectionately called Sassy Joel. That's what people call me, Sassy Joel. But every day for over 400 days, I would go live in the Facebook group and just like have a word. And then in 10 minutes, we would write a new joke, and then I'd read the jokes on air. And then we'd have like a winner. We would vote for, you know, our favorite joke of the day. And that became kind of like a community builder. And then from there, it's grown into this international comedy community where now, on a daily basis, I'm hearing from comics all around the world about how much they enjoy Hot Breath, or how this episode helped them, or thanking me just for the resources and how they don't know where they would be without it. And it just kind of all stemmed from, well, I don't have my live shows anymore. What do I have? So I just started building this community, and now it's become this ecosystem of comics helping comics, which I'm so grateful for.
Oh, man, that is a great story. And it goes back to what you said earlier in the recording, is that you have to be consistent and persistent in doing something every morning at 10 a.m. if is going to find an audience. It takes time, but you were able to build an audience through your consistent work about comedy. So what you were able to do is pivot from performing on stage to talking about comedy and sharing comedy with like-minded people. And much like any business or new thing that you go into, it started off with just you talking to yourself, and then it built up, and you found an international audience now. Is there any idea how many people you're connected with now?
My gosh, I don't even know. I mean, the Facebook group has almost 5,000 people. I mean, the YouTube channel has almost 20,000 subscribers. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it keeps growing, and I keep hearing from different people, you know, every week. So it's kind of like a bunch of people with a common interest coming together. And I think the biggest part of it is the supportive element of it. Like when I started, it was very competitive and negative, and there weren't really that many comics helping each other. It was very kind of cutthroat. So I really wanted to be intentional about the culture of this community is that it's positive and it's supportive, and we're here to help each other get better together. And I've always been mindful of that from the beginning. And I think what I'm finding is a lot of my career, just like the podcast, just like my comedy special, just like this community, is it's like, it's become me creating things that I wish existed. And then that in turn seems to be relating to a lot of people that kind of wish the same thing existed. So it's kind of become part of how I move in my comedy career. It's like, well, what do I wish existed? Okay, well, let's work to, you know, make that into fruition.
Yeah, but that's genius, Joel, that you were able to build and start ideas that other people wish they could do. And they find you and they glam on, because it wasn't just you that was put out of business when COVID hit. It was all these mm-hmm. other comic wannabes or all these other comics, and they're looking for a way to share their art form, to share their talent, to build their talent. They can't get on stage, but hey, this guy with Hot Breath Media, ladies and gentlemen, pay attention, go to Hot Breath Media and connect with people that are in the same position as they were, and then learn, grow, and get some benefit out of that. Because I know that not only are you a successful stand-up comic, but you have become, especially in the Southeast, a huge teacher of what it takes to write, the commitment, the persistency to write comedy, and then You give them a virtual stage with your Facebook page and with your podcast to share some of that comedy. I mean, Joel, my hat's off to you. I feel like I'm pretty strong on the producer side, but you've really created and done things that other people just think about. Good job.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Scott, especially coming from someone like you who has so much experience in the industry. You know, that really means a lot.
Well, I don't say it lightly, but you've really tapped into something. Here's a situation where COVID hits, wipes out an entire industry, and you thought to yourself, well, what do I wish existed? And instead of just thinking about it, you did it. And it's the doers, the entrepreneurs in this world that keep things moving, because of what you created, Hot Breath Media, your Hot Breath podcast, is a vehicle for other people to climb in with you and take a journey down the artistic aspect of comedy. Now, sadly, there's not, I don't know how you've been able to do it, and it's difficult to make money doing virtual things, but you're still, from a creative point of view, giving everybody such a great, again, I'm going to use the word opportunity to continue with what's important to them. Have you been able to transition some of this and make some money?
Yeah. So the biggest probably transition it's made into like financial is through the online classes and workshops that I do. And then also what's been an interesting side effect of this community is I'm getting booked by people in the community as well. So like I just recently booked a run of shows in Virginia because of someone in the community. And I have other people reaching out to me wanting to book me, or like knowing of people looking for comedians and they refer me. So that's been an interesting, unexpected side effect of the community is like, oh, now people see me as like a hireable comic that they know will do a good job.
Well, but you proved yourself not only as an entrepreneur and as a creative force through, let's catch the audience up, through 2020 where nothing was happening. And then in 2021, you created these great vehicles for people to continue experiencing not only training and writing about comedy, but even performing some comedy virtually. You have become the face of stand-up comedy during a difficult time for this country and for the industry. Now we're getting into 2022. Those connections, that consistency, persistency, and effort putting into keeping comedy alive is paying off by you getting more gigs. I mean, I think that's poetic. I think that's perfect.
Oh, amen. I hope they keep coming. You know,
it will, Joel. You know, it will. You've become a name in the industry, and that name is, you know, comedy. You know, you've proven yourself not only through your teachings, but through your, you know, virtual performing with people, and the fact that it's changed into a way for you to make some money through live gigs, I think is incredible. Now, as we go into 2022, what sort of events and projects are you looking into? What are you going to be doing later this year?
Well, the big thing I'm building right now is, as we talk about, like focusing on what you can control, is like as like my road gigs are coming back and things like that, because now those are more competitive than ever. Like in the comedy club world, you know, now comics have been unemployed for over a year. So now everyone is scrambling to try to get their foot back in the door at places. So what I've really been doing, again, is focusing on myself and really starting to produce my own shows. And I've started like a live production company called Feel Good Funny, and around the Atlanta area, with the plan for this to expand into like companies seeing Feel Good Funny as a brand, they can start booking for events and things like that. And I can start hiring other comics to help as well to perform at these events. It's really another example of like, well, what can I control? Okay, I can control me reaching out to venues. I can control me producing my own shows. So that's a big part of what I'm doing on the show production side. But I did also just record a Dry Bar special as well.
Oh, great. Congratulations, Joel. Dry Bar is a great way to get your name out there.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm very excited about that opportunity. Who knows what will come of it, you know, but I am excited for that to come out this year and really to see what we can do with that. Hopefully that new exposure to that audience, because I am a clean comedian. I am intentional about being clean, and my vision, my initial vision was, okay, I want to say I'm a full-time comedian. Like kind of the next chapter of that is I envision me performing at a 2 p.m. show. I want to do afternoon shows, Scott. I don't want to be out at midnight in front of drunk people. I want to be doing a 2 p.m. show where there's grandkids to grandparents there. And I think that's like what I'm envisioning now. And that's when I'll know when I've hit that kind of that next level, is when I can be performing afternoon shows in front of just all family members, just giving people a feel good, funny time. And that's really what I'm working towards. So I'm hoping that with the Dry Bar special, that'll expose me to an audience that appreciates clean comedy and really is a fan of comedy, but also appreciates it being clean, and they'll tell their friends and family and share. So that's probably the biggest opportunity I'll have gotten to this date in my career, because I've filmed some pilots, I've filmed some TV shows. They never came out, or I got edited out of them. You know, all these little milestones along the way of like, oh, this is it. You know, so at this point, I don't get too overly excited about anything. I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to film a dry bar. I'll be sure I'm prepared enough and do my best set for that, and then let all else fall into place as it may. But I am being very intentional about being ready for when that special comes out. By, I've been building the Hot Breath YouTube channel, but now I'm building my own personal YouTube channel. I'm doing Man on the Street skits in there. I started this vlog kind of tracking my journey as a pandemic comic of, okay, I was this comedian, and then all of a sudden it disappears overnight. Here I am trying to crawl back into being a professional comedian again, and really just documenting that process that I don't think people really get to see of the pursuit of being a comedian. That people see Netflix and they're like, oh, so they just called Netflix and were like, hey, I'm funny, put me on the give me a special. You know, there's a whole...
I wish it was that easy, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's like the 1% of the 1% you see. And there's this whole other 99% of working comics that I don't think people really get access to. But I think with how much comedy is booming now, I think there's more of a thirst and interest in comedians and into the comedic process and what it actually takes to become a comedian. And I'm hoping to find that intersection and be that comic that people see and really start to root for as this underdog that they want to see achieve that 2 p.m. afternoon show.
Well, let me just say I'm very impressed with you, Joel. And I want to say in front of my podcast audience that you may never end up being famous, but to me, you're already a huge success. I mean, you took from doing a few open mics, becoming a road warrior, doing some comedy, to hitting probably one of the biggest walls to the growth of a career, namely the pandemic. And you had the entrepreneurial spirit to keep going and recreate yourself with Hot Breath, your podcast, your Facebook group. I'm taking people on a journey here now. And now we're getting back on stage, but things have changed. You're older, you've got more needs financially, and other comics have gone into acting or have given up, or they've become writers. Or, I mean, once you are a comic, you can go on several paths. And I am really impressed, and I'm an entrepreneur. So from an entrepreneur to an entrepreneur, I can see that you made that transition from just a comic, which is a great thing artistically, but you've mixed it with business. Now you're an entrepreneur. And guess what? Your next step is producer, because you want to take control of your career. You're now going to produce the shows that you have not been able to have an opportunity to get because of COVID. And with those produced shows, build your own world, your own success, your own finances. And that is really, really impressive, Joel. And as a producer, I got to tell you, it's not an easy path. It can be risky at times, but if you don't bet on yourself, you're always going to lose.
Yeah. I appreciate you saying that, Scott. Yeah, that's not easy.
You've had all these little successes, like you said, getting on stage, you know, starting the podcast, getting Hot Breath Media going. Doing a dry bar comedy set is going to really help get your name out there. But starting to produce your own shows where you can perform and produce, I mean, that's genius. You're going to create your own success. That's awesome.
Thank you. That's the whole goal, Scott. So it's, some days are better than others, as you know, in any self-made pursuit. But is not losing the vision is what keeps you going on those and going through the highs and the lows.
Well, and let's get back to the root of it all. You're a funny guy. if you weren't dedicated and committed 12 years ago to writing and performing clean comedy, you wouldn't even have the opportunity to try to produce shows now. So the fact that you became, created yourself into a professional entertainer and then morphed into a businessman is what's not only in my mind already made you a success, going to make you a huge success moving forward. I mean, you're a young guy. You got lots of time ahead of you. So let's go back to talking about where people can interact with you. We have Hot Breath, the podcast. So ladies and gentlemen, just go to Apple Podcast or any directory you like, any feed you like, and put in Hot Breath. You'll find this very successful podcast, very entertaining. I've heard many myself. You and I did a lot of stuff on Clubhouse. You've got your Facebook group. Is that called Hot Breath?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you search Hot Breath on Facebook, you'll see it's called The Comedy Writing Room presented by Hot Breath.
So The Comedy Writing Room by Hot Breath on Facebook, and people can get to be a part of or watch what you're doing with new comics. Definitely go to Dry Bar Comedy and just search Joel Byers. You'll find his set and learn about the Feel Good Funny group. Now, share with the audience what how people can, you know, see your comedy and be a part of your events going into late 22.
Yeah, so my website, joelbyerscomedy.com, will be the best way to see like my schedule or to reach out to me directly about booking me for an event as a comedian or event host as well. I host a lot of events, and anywhere that public speaking is needed is what I'm starting to find as a comedian. When you talk about the entrepreneurial mindset, it's like, we're learning a lot of different skills as comedians beyond just standing and telling jokes. You know, we can engage an audience now, so we can be an MC. We know how to write jokes, so we may be able to write like advertising copy in a funny way for certain companies, you know. So that's how I'm starting to use the skill set of a comedian to really diversify kind of the income streams that you can have as a comedian. So anyone that found this story interesting and sounds like I'd want to work together, then JoelByersComedy.com is the best place to reach out to me to work together. And all my social media is Joel Byers Comedy, whether it's the YouTube channel or Instagram or Twitter, any of those, it's all Joel Byers Comedy.
Okay, so everybody in the audience, you have two ways to get involved with this very successful guy. You have Hot Breath Media, and more importantly, JoelByersComedy.com. That's once again, JoelByersComedy.com. And get a chance to connect with this very entrepreneurial, successful comedy writer and performer from Tucker, Georgia. Ladies and gentlemen, Joel Byers. Whoa, what a great... Hey, Joel, I am so excited for you. I think the future is going to be bright for you. I think Dry Bar Comedy is going to be a good plus. I think you producing your own shows is going to really take you into a strong financial direction. And I thank you so much for taking time and doing this interview and this podcast to share everything you've succeeded with in comedy.
Well, thank you, Scott. And I appreciate all you're doing for comics and comedy fans as well. And you've been really supportive of my journey. And those kind of, you know, supports really keep the momentum going when there may be like that, those struggling days of like, what am I doing? Or is anything working? And then other days, it's like, everything's working. Like, people like you are the ones that keep us moving forward. And I really appreciate that.
Oh, well, you're welcome. And to be able to share it together, we did that little run on Clubhouse together. And I am a big fan of your Facebook page and your trainings and your podcast. It's just fun for me as a fellow comedy producer to watch you grow and develop. So, ladies and gentlemen, check out JoelByersComedy.com. Look for Joel Byers on the Dry Bar Comedy. But you don't have to wait, because right now we have a short set by Joel. Joel, thanks for doing the podcast. Everybody stay tuned. Joel, thanks again for doing this.
Thank you, Scott.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, here we go. Joel Byers live on stage.
Someone warned me about the wedding planning, though. Oh, my. I would rather plan a divorce.
Thank you.
no one warned me of the interrogation that was going to happen. Every day, my wife would just wake me up with her eyes wide open. Who's the band going to be? What's our hashtag going to be? I was like, I'm good with whatever your parents pay for. I defer to Ann and Randall. Let's talk to the investors on this. Because I'm still paying off your rings. Yeah, congratulations, ladies. You get two rings. That's why we get paid more. It's a ring tax. Yeah, Beyonce didn't tell us that part, did she? She just said, put a ring on it. She's like, if you like it, then you gotta put a ring on it. She forgot to mention, but if you love her, you gotta put another ring on it. And then there's a ring tax you gotta keep paying. Oh, no, 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 no. It was all worth it, though, man. I tell you, the wedding is like an emotional release. Like, I'm... I cried a suspicious amount. It was cute at first. People were like, oh, he loves her. But then it escalated to, oh. He's about to confess. But it is emotional. I think anybody who's married in here, any man, when you... when you see your wife walking down the aisle... and it hits you. That's it. The wedding planning's over. Moves you to tears. Oh. And then my wife started, she saw me crying, and then she started crying because we were getting behind schedule.
Well, everybody, that was Joel Byers doing a couple minutes of stand-up comedy about his wedding and wedding planning. Very funny guy, very talented entrepreneur. It was really exciting to have him on the podcast. If you're anywhere in the Southeast, check out joelbyerscomedy.com. Go out and see Joel. He's still performing live on a regular basis. And if you get a chance, check out Hot Breath podcast and his Facebook site, Hot Breath Media. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us for this week's show. We'll see you next Sunday. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Stand Up Comedy, your host and MC. For information on the show, merchandise, and our sponsors, or to send comments to Scott, visit our website at www.standupyourhostandmc.com. Look for more episodes soon and enjoy the world of stand-up comedy. Visit a comedy showroom near you.